Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
The McNeil and Parkin Show, afternoons on The Score.
Takes his time. Here's the pitch.
He got it, Gary Templeton! The 3,000th strikeout of his career. Gary Templeton goes down swinging. And Ferguson Jenkins being congratulated, throws the baseball into the dugout. All of his teammates coming out to shake his hand. The photographers are out there. A historic moment for Chicago Cubs baseball. A standing ovation. It all started 17 years ago when he struck out Dick Groat in 1965. Listen to the crowd.
He's a visitor, but a lot of them came to see it.
The McNeil and Parkin Show on 670 The Score.
That call from that legendary broadcaster of that legendary moment brought a smile to the face of our next guest. Hall of Famer, three-time All-Star, Cy Young winner, over 3,000 strikeouts. He led his league in complete games four times. He won 20-plus games seven times. Fergie Jenkins in studio with Mac and Parkins on The Score. Hey, Fergie.
Hey, guys. How we doing?
Good to have you. Always great to talk baseball with you. Collective sigh of relief a little bit yesterday on the north side. That's how you ring in a home schedule, isn't it, Fergie?
Definitely. Opening day, I think you got to tell yourself and the team, this is your home ballpark. Now you got to punish somebody. And they went out and scored some runs, and that's what it's all about.
Did you have fun yesterday?
Oh, definitely. Being on the field with four other Hall of Famers, and the new inductee, Lee Smith. I mean, he has taken it all in. I think he's really understanding what the Hall of Fame is really all about.
Yeah, I was just going to add, I mean, you saw him at the very beginning, right?
In 82, when he came up in 80, the end of 81 season, and I seen him learn how to be a bullpen pitcher and how to close games off. And we used to sit out in the outfield and just talk about the game of baseball, and then I showed him a few grips.
Really?
He had an outstanding curveball, but he didn't throw it much, but he had a great slider.
He got to throw out the ceremonial pitch yesterday.
Yes, Lee. He did.
And it's the first time I've ever seen him, Fergie, where he didn't look like he was in pain. Did he always had that pained expression on his face?
I mean, as big as he is, he's letting it go. Let me tell you, when you're 240 pounds, 6'6", let me tell you, you're letting it go. But, I mean, he's gained a lot of weight, but other than that, he wouldn't go to the rubber. I wanted him to go back to the rubber and throw, but he didn't. He threw it from the grass.
Come on. He gets 60 feet, 6 inches.
He gets a handicap for the weight.
Yeah, that's
he's
it, probably.
He's carrying a few extra pants. Oh, but, you're in 42 waisted pants?
Yeah.
All right, come on up to the grass.
That's a little disappointing for a Hall of Famer. Toe the rubber one more time.
Yeah, that would have been nice. Yeah.
So what did you teach him specifically? What did you take credit for?
We used to throw in the outfield. We work on his grip with a slider. He didn't have much of a breaking pitch. And I think over the course of about a month or so of spring training and into the season, he developed a really, really good slider. And as I said, he had a good curveball, but Jim Fry didn't want him to throw it. He had had three pitches, fastball, curveball, slider. But he ended up with two, fastball, slider. And he got a lot of saves, 470s, 490, something like that, saves.
Fergie Jenkins is in studio with us promoting his new book, The 1969 Cubs, Long Remembered, Never Forgotten. And if you want this Fergie Jenkins t-shirt, which I'm putting up right now at Brian Gertsch's video stream at watch670thescore.com on our Facebook page, it's got all of his accolades on the back, National Baseball Hall of Fame, 1981.
That one in your hands will not fit on Lee Smith based on Fergie's description.
No, not really.
But you can send an email to autograph1@gmail.com. That's autograph1@gmail.com if you want information on the shirts. Man, you're tough on Lee Smith, huh?
Well, the biggest thing is learning how to be a Hall of Famer. You know, his new name is No Show Lee, because he used to be very late showing up. I said, Lee, you are now in the Hall of Fame. Be nice to be prompt.
He's going to be late to his own speech.
Punctuality is an asset.
Oh,
right?
Totally. And you got to tell people that you're willing to understand what the Hall of Fame is all about. And he does. I mean, he's really enjoyed it over the last 2.5, 3 months. See that the I think the announcement was in December. So he's had a chance all through spring training and now the starting of the season, and he doesn't get inducted until July to understand what the Hall of Fame is all about and to understand that you are now a different individual. You are part of a different party in the game of baseball, being a Hall of Famer.
What changes?
Theoretically, money, appearances.
Sure.
And you got to carry yourself a different way. I mean, whenever I do appearance, I wear a sport coat. I mean, there's no more, hey, floppy jeans, and I wear cowboy boots all the time still. But the thing is, that I just think that the dress is very important, being punctual and understanding that you're in a different class now. And you can write HOF behind your name. Really important.
Mm-hmm. What will we learn about the 69 Cubs in this new offering you wrote?
Well, the biggest thing is I'm trying to recap what the season was all about, starting in spring training and then the season. And believe me, the heat didn't bother us. We played day games well before that. So we got plenty of hits. We just didn't score runs. We might have led the league in double plays at the end of the season, those last 3.5, 4 weeks.
But Ernie and Sano got really cold in September, if I remember correctly.
Beckford and Kessinger. Hickman was our best clutch hitter with Billy Williams. But we just didn't score the runs that we should have. We had men on base, but we just didn't get the key base hit.
Did Leo use the bench enough?
No. We had a couple of guys. We had Nate Oliver, Gene Oliver, Willie Smith. There were some guys that were sitting there waiting, Popovich.
Mm-hmm.
But Leo played the guys that he theoretically thought were going to bring us home the last maybe 20 games.
What was your motivation for wanting to write the book?
It's a 50th year anniversary. George Castle got a hold of me about 8 months ago and said, Ferg, you know, 50 years is coming up. This was 2018. And I said, I'd like to put something together and just let the Chicago fans know what that year was all about to the players that are still alive, because we've lost 16 of those players off that 25-man roster. And just to get an insight of what the team and the management, the Leo, and the players that were on the field, what they went through to try to win that that division, but it just didn't happen.
It's staggering how much love a team that didn't get to the postseason has received for 50 years now, isn't it? I mean, aren't you just amazed at how recognized you are around North America?
Well, the biggest thing is we had 5 Hall of Famers, including Leo, myself, Billy, Ernie, and Ron Santo, all in one ball club. And to really play as well as we did and then all of a sudden not fall flat, but just didn't do the fundamental things we should have done, the Mets just played a little better.
Does it still bother you?
No, not really. We played as hard as we could to get there. I look back at some of the games I pitched, maybe a pitch here, a sequence of maybe pitching to different hitters a certain way might have turned something around, but that's water under the bridge now.
What's the thing that fans ask you about the most from the 69 Cubs?
Why didn't you win? you know,
fair question.
The biggest thing is, you know, we people cried. I cried too. She said, "You're not the only one. I was there. I cried when we didn't win."
I'm refreshing myself this morning, and I'm looking at your numbers on BaseballReference.com, and I see five seasons where he eclipsed 300 innings pitched, and of the five, led the league only one time. That's kind of crazy. I mean, 4-man rotations, but what has happened where pitchers just, is it the human growth phenomenon? Too much terror on the rotis laughing at me as I'm trying to ask the question.
I think it's agents. Agents and the ball club doesn't want to overwork their players. 200 inning maximum is kind of the thing that they look
That's
at
That's an
now.
Accomplishment now.
One year, I almost had 200 innings at the All-Star break. But, you know, that's just something that the game has changed in that respect. There's 7 or 8 guys in the bullpen, and there's always 2 guys are the called-upon individuals. They're the manager looks at them as the strategy. Could be a left-hander, could be a right-hander. Then you've got holders, you've got the setup, and then the closer. And there's 5 starters. There's 13 pitchers on the team now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little different. When I broke in, there was only 9. To make the ball club, you better have a good spring training. Or Gene Mlock, when I was with the Phillies, you weren't going to make that ball club.
In terms of, you know, I once made the argument that all of the best athletes are playing today, or basically, right? Because just evolution, sports science, massage therapists, nutritionists. And someone came back and said, oh, yeah, how come no one can throw a complete game anymore? I was like, oh, checkmate. Like, I didn't really have an answer for it. So do you think that the athletes have gotten worse? Because that doesn't make much sense to me intellectually that they'd be worse today.
They haven't gotten worse. I just think it's the preparation a lot of times. I ran all the time. I had stamina. I think the lower half of my body was always pretty strong, the core. And to get to the seventh and eighth inning, I didn't walk a lot of people. Maybe one or two batters or less, and maybe four or five hits. So there wasn't a lot of men on base. I wasn't pitching out of the stretch a lot. And my pitch count was low. Maybe had, when I got to the seventh inning, 85 to 90 pitches. And now I had that opportunity to get to the ninth. If Kessinger got on, I had to bunt him over. Or if Randy Hunley got on, I had to bunt him over. It all depends on what the lineup was all about. Or if I had a chance to go up there and swing for myself, I could do that too, because I wasn't a bad hitter.
You were a terrific hitter. No. I just in an era when a few guys were willing to swing the bat and not just stand there like a statue. Well, Bill Hands was a bit of a statue. But you worked at it.
Oh, yeah. I took a lot of batting practice. Both Kenny Holzman and even in 70, Milt Pappas and I used to have a contest all the time hitting home runs in batting practice. But the thing was to put the ball in play. I was very fortunate enough. I wasn't afraid to hit against guys like Drysdale or Gibson or Seaver, whoever the other pitcher was. I was standing in there. I wasn't just going to take a pitch. If they laid a fastball in there, I was trying to whack it as far as I could.
So who was the best hitter among the pitchers?
In my era?
Yeah. Fergie was among them.
Well, I was right there. Kenny Holzman and I, we got a lot of hits. One year, I had well over 20-some hits and 20-some RBIs. Yeah.
How do you feel about the DH going away in the National League, which is where everybody's wanting it to go?
Well, yeah, they propose it every year, but the National League turns it down. Keep it in the American League.
You don't think it should be in the National League?
No, I think if the guys work at it.
You think it's fun watching Kyle Hendricks stand there and look scared for three pitches?
Well, he's got something to work on. You know, when Lester came here, he didn't get a hit until he'd been at bat almost, the season was almost
That's
over.
That's true.
Right.
And now he's turned into a much better hitter. So I think you have to work at it. I mean, there's so many different things. Base running, being able to bunt, and being able to put the ball in play. And I think, you know, when you spend 7-8 years in the American League like Lester did, you don't go to the plate. So you've got to work at it.
Then he gets hurt running the bases, though.
That hamstring. I think he just pulled it slightly. So he might not miss a rotation start.
Joe said today it'll be a start, maybe two. We're talking to Fergie Jenkins in studio. You can get his T-shirt by sending an email to autograph1@gmail.com. His book is available on Amazon, The 1969 Cubs, Long Remembered, Never Forgotten. I wanted to talk to you about Lester. He's kind of a throwback. 11 consecutive years starting 31 or more games, which you started that number of games 11 times, so the same thing between you and Lester. And he's trying to be more of a leader. Theo asked him to be more of a leader. Can you be a leader of a 25-man club when you're only playing once every 5 days?
Sure. They depend on you to go out there and have a top performance. You can change a losing series. You can keep the winning series going. And I think the number one thing is to understand the ball club will play hard for you if you pitch hard. And that's the number one thing that he's capable of doing, keeping your ball club in the game, giving up less runs, throwing strikes, keeping your players on their toes, and by far – seeing they play hard for you, you play hard.
What were your expectations of this pitching staff? We're 10 games in, 4-6 now, but have lost three straight series. What did you think of this staff when they broke camp?
Well, they had a great spring. You know, I think the number one factor that to me, Darvish hadn't really pitched enough. He still didn't have the control. Hendricks has the control. So does the left-hander we got from the White Sox.
Quintana.
Yeah. I like him, but he's got to throw more breaking pitches. I think the fastball he's got has less movement than what he thinks for the catcher. I think he has a better breaking ball, better slider. I just think they've got – and the young fellow they got from the Texas Rangers.
Mm-hmm, Hamels.
Hamels. I think that they've got the right people.
The young fellow. He's 35.
Well, hey, when I was 35, I considered myself young.
Sure.
So I said, I'm going to play it on 40, which I did. But the thing is that I think that they've got the pitching staff that can still win. They just got to keep putting the numbers up. You got to pitch a lot of innings. And by far, you got to win a series. You just can't keep losing series one after the other. But I think they're capable.
What about the bullpen?
They got to work at the bullpen. That's a little different story right now. Morrill, I'm not sure when he's coming back, but he was a cog with the Dodgers, and I thought he was excellent with the Cubs that first year, but now he just can't seem to get back.
We'll keep telling stories and get analysis. Fergie is on top of his game today with this team and, of course, stories from yesteryear. His book, The 1969 Cubs, Long Remembered, Never Forgotten, available Amazon.com. Fergie Jenkins in studio with us. McNeil and Park is on the score.
On this day, I'm not only being inducted alone, I'm being inducted on July 21st, 1991, with my father, Fergie Jenkins Sr., Hershey. It is with the deepest humility and the warmest regards for the sport I accept this prodigious award, acknowledgement and the recognition from the Baseball Writers of America and the National Baseball Hall of Fame. I will cherish it forever. Thank you very much.
A pro's pro and a Hall of Famer in the 1991 class, Fergie Jenkins in studio. McNeil and Park is on the score. This hour brought to you by Vasectomy Clinics of Chicago, Hub Arkish. At 4 o'clock. If you want a Fergie Jenkins t-shirt, you can send an email to autograph and then the number one, the word autograph, number one at gmail.com. And his book, The 1969 Cubs, Long Remembered, Never Forgotten, available now on amazon.com.
Fergie, far too modest about his offensive prowess during his career. In 71, he hit .243, Parkins, with an OBP of .282, six homers, drove in 20 runs, and oh yeah, he won the Cy Young as well, another season with 20 wins, six consecutive 20-win seasons.
Do you enjoy people reading your numbers to you?
You have to, don't you?
It'd be kind of cool.
Well, I get reminded of sometimes, but you know, it's nice to know that, hey, I was able to accomplish that, but you know, a lot of times you forget the numbers. But I always remember six 20-game seasons because the Cubs, the teammates I had, gave me that opportunity to win ball games, and Leo left me in ball games, 2-1, 3-2, to get that opportunity to possibly win a game, maybe in the eighth or ninth inning.
In 68, and you won 20 games in 68, that's one of the six straight, you also lost 5 1-0 games and were in a no decision in another 1-0 Cubs loss.
Right.
That's crazy. No wonder they lowered the mound the following year in 69. You guys were picking on those poor wimps like Mays and Aaron and Yastrzemski. You were too rough on those guys, man.
Well, there's a lot of guys that we got out easy. But maybe the easiest, Cepeda might have been my easiest out.
Orlando Cepeda, really?
Yeah. I was just fortunate enough. He just didn't pick up the spin on my slider, which was I was pretty happy.
Who was a hack who did pick you up? A guy who wasn't a really good ball player but had good success against Ferguson Arthur Jenkins.
Don Money.
Don Money, the third baseman.
with Milwaukee, you know. And he played with the Phillies too. But, I mean, he just picked the ball up. There were a few guys that could pick it up. I mean, not saying that guys were just hacks, but if you throw them enough sliders, they understand where it's going.
And who's the toughest battle?
Probably Roberto Clemente. You know, Pete Rose is going to get his hits. Some hitters you can't stop. Rod Carew can't stop. But Clemente was dangerous all the time. He hit the ball up the middle. If you made a bad pitch over the plate or outside, he'd reach out and tap it up the middle. And you could hear it go by you. Thank you. Thank God it didn't hit me.
Man, those are some incredible names. Was there ever someone who you faced, they got in the box against you, and you're like, man, I can't believe I'm pitching to this guy. Was there a welcome to the big leagues, I can't believe I'm in the same field with this guy moment?
Well, the first time I faced Willie Mays out in San Francisco on a road trip, I'm trying to think of the lineup. McCovey, I think, hit third, Mays fourth, and probably Bobby Bonds fifth or sixth, and they had a good hitting lineup.
That's Willie, a good order.
Yeah, that'll work.
I just think that Felipe Lou was in that lineup too, and I just think that the first time you face Willie Mays, you know, you, as a kid, you said, "Man, if I could ever get to the big leagues, I'd love to face him." And here he is, digging in at the plate.
I got bad Willie Mays, and it was still good Willie Mays. I mean, still with the Giants. That last year with the Mets was a disaster. But even at the end, in the late 60s, when he was an old player, he still was a fantastic player.
Yeah,
defensively, too.
He could still catch the ball, throw, and he still had good speed. But he could put the ball in play. I mean, he could – I think the biggest thing is the bat speed hadn't changed a whole lot, and he still attacked the ball.
Was he your favorite player as a kid?
There was two. Mickey Mantle was one, Hank Aaron probably second, and Mays three. But I had a chance to face Aaron and Mays a lot. Only Mickey Mantle in all-star competition.
Oh, wow. What was that like?
Interesting.
Yeah.
When they announce his name, you go, all right, Mickey Mantle. Okay.
Did you go out with him by any chance? That might have been a fun
night.
Yeah,
right.
We have a texter wanting to know where your Canadian accent is today.
I've lost it. I signed when I was 18 years old. I came over here in 1962. I think my accent's gone.
Plus, Chatham, Ontario is just on the other side of Detroit.
Yeah, 50, right? That's, 60 that's, miles away. You're right.
That's basically Detroit.
Almost. Well, my dad was born in Windsor.
Okay.
And from Windsor to Chatham, it's about 50 miles. But I don't say about or out anymore. You know,
did you play hockey when you were a kid?
Yes, I did.
You had to, right? It's definitely. Law in Canada.
Yeah, I started skating when I was 4 years old. Yeah.
And you played with the Globetrotters.
Yeah, I played with them 3 seasons.
Man. Yeah. So do you think you were the guy that was such a good athlete that you could have gone pro in a sport other than baseball?
Well, my first sport was hockey, and that's what I wanted, to be an NHL hockey player, but it just didn't work out. And the scout that signed me, Gene DeJura, at the age of 15, said that, I seen you play at first, and I watched you warm up. I said, I think you've got a definite opportunity. If you want to be a pro player, pitching might be the way to go. And he was right.
He was pretty good advice.
Yes, he was. Yeah, man, I worked at it. I threw every Tuesday and Thursday, he'd pick me up, and I'd throw in a local gymnasium. And I got better with my control. I got better throwing the ball, movement. And I signed in 62 with the Phillies, and I had an opportunity to turn pro.
What's the craziest thing that being a member of the Harlem Globetrotters, what's the craziest door that opened for you?
Meadowlark, Curly, geez, Bobby Joe Mason, so many of these guys, Showboat Hall, Geese Osby, just being on the same bus with them and saying to myself, I played a certain sport, but now I'm entertaining with another sport. And these guys were great basketball players and great entertainers. And they welcomed me into their world. And I look back at it. I was grateful for it. And every night, they played to win. We never lost to the Generals. We never lost.
Hard group to fit in with?
No. Curly Neal welcomed me. He was the first one to welcome me. He was a big baseball fan. He loved baseball. And then Meadowlark and Leon Hilliard, a bunch of the guys, they just kind of welcomed me in, which was really nice for that situation. It made it a lot easier for me to play.
Fergie, yesterday at Wrigley Field, you get a chance to get reacquainted with some ex-teammates and some Cubs legends. One who has not been back for some time is Sammy Sosa. Parkins, was 12 when Sosa was doing his thing years ago.
It was 12 in 1998, summer of 98.
Sammy was a reason to go to the ballpark, and the only reason for a few years. I wish some things were different, because that number 21 should be flying somewhere in Wrigley Field. Don't you agree?
Definitely. I met Sammy when he was 17 years old in the Texas organization. And when he came up from Tulsa, and I was a coach at Oklahoma City, I could see he had the potential to be a great ball player. And then he got traded to the White Sox for Bell. And then he came over to the Cubs, and I started coaching in 95. And you could see he was going to be a talented athlete and put some numbers up. And I just think that if he would apologize to the organization and basically to himself, saying that, hey, what I did maybe was not the correct thing to do, get back into the fold. People love Sammy Sosa. They love to see him hit. They love to see him jump after he hit a home run and to circle the bases and always kiss to his mother. And
yeah, but he sprints out to right field.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, he played hard. And unfortunately, bad publicity just really is it's taken him to another level. He's hiding now, I think, away from what he should be. He was an athlete. Get back to where you should be, back in the baseball fold, and apologize.
So what would you say to him if you had a chance to take him out for a beverage?
I'd like to just get into his head and say, Sammy, hey, the number one thing, you love to play the game of baseball, and you wanted Ruben Sierra. When I joined the ball club with the Rangers, Ruben Sierra had 21. He had to take 20. And until he got to the big leagues, he got that number 21. Roberto Clemente was his hero. So I just think that talking to him and letting him know that baseball people love you, it's time to get back into the baseball fold.
Does that steroid era offend your sensibilities? You're a Hall of Famer.
Not to me, no. I just think that guys didn't use their head that had that opportunity to take a steroid or they take a drug to improve your ability. Your ability is already there. It's God-given. All you've done is work at it and worked hard at it to improve on it. And I'm not sure if steroids will make you a better hitter, a better runner, a better individual. But, hey, I didn't take it, so I don't know.
I'd love to see him back.
Oh, definitely.
Sammy Sosa Day, he sprints out to right field. They retire his number, put it up on the right field foul pole. I'd pay definitely. Top dollar for a ticket in right
People
field.
People would love
day.
To see that happen. I believe they would.
Fergie, would you have taken steroids if they would have been available?
Not really, no.
They were just starting to make their way around
in
professional
the 80s,
sports.
Late 80s, right.
Yeah, the Steelers in the late 70s and then baseball more in the 80s.
Right.
But you never were in that position where
I never heard about it until that young fella died with the Oakland team.
Lyle Alzado.
Alzado.
Okay.
I read about it in Sports Illustrated. But to me, the ability I had to throw the ball, make it move, I was happy with that.
You didn't need it, huh?
Right.
What should baseball do to get more young people watching? Because they're not, according to the research.
Ooh. I think that baseball's on TV all the time. There's 30 teams. I don't know how many more teams you need. But I think kids need to go outside instead of standing in front of a TV screen playing games. So
with their thumbs.
Right. And get out there and hit a baseball. Catch a baseball. A lot of kids don't know how to throw a baseball.
What about getting more black players to play baseball?
That's something that's been in the works for years. The guys have been trying that. I'm not sure who can stimulate a certain individual to play. You know, when I played, more Cubans were playing the game of baseball.
Sure.
And then it started a little bit in Venezuela. A few Puerto Ricans with Clemente and Cepeda. And then all of a sudden, it's all Dominicans now. As they say, if you can't hit a breaking ball or fastball, you can't get off the island.
Yeah, I know someone who played in the minors for a while, and then he went over and played in Asia, and he said that that was what allowed him to extend his big league career, because that's what taught him how to hit breaking pitches. Just, you know, just culturally, it's different all over the world.
Sure.
And so you're able to do that, and then you can come back and be a big-time big leaguer.
I think what happens sometimes, to get a hitter out, sure, they're going to try to throw breaking balls. Maybe it could be a screwball, slider, curveball. But I think you have to learn how to hit certain pitches to make you a better ball player. And when my minor league system, I had to learn how to throw better strikes to the corners, set hitters up. A guy like Robin Roberts, Cal McClish, and Joe Becker helped me with that. Three pitching coaches that knew what the game was all about. They knew how to talk to another pitcher to get him to understand what to try to accomplish.
The game has changed, though, right? I mean, it's so much more home runs, strikeouts are okay. If you're a hitter, if you
right.
strike out 175 times as a hitter, doesn't really matter anymore as long as you hit home runs.
If you hit, as you say, a lot of home runs, but a lot of hitters don't get 400 or 500 at bats in a season. So you got to learn how to cut down your strikeout total. Who wants to strike out 175 times? I remember I shouldn't say that. Dick Allen one year and Bobby Bond struck out a lot. But I think if you would cut that portion down, maybe 20%, you might put the ball in play. You might get over 200 hits. Who knows?
So how would you attack the hitters these days that are focusing on elevating the ball and all of that? Because you weren't, you know, you had the 3,000-plus strikeouts, but how would you attack these hitters?
I pitch down in the strike zone, pitch in, and then show that sniffer under their nose once or twice just to let them know you're out there, and then go back out there slider again.
The sniffer.
The sniffer's a valuable tool, isn't it?
Oh,
pitch
definitely.
Him inside. You
just let them know.
You want to hang out over the dish? You want to extend on anything outside? And see if you like this one a little
right.
bit.
Right, and I can't have both sides of the plate, neither can they, but you'll see guys that hang out over the plate looking for that breaking ball away. That straightens them out. That just let them know. Change their eye level.
Who's your favorite hitter to throw the sniffer to?
Ooh.
Whoever was standing too close to
too
the
close.
Plate.
You know, I'm trying to think of his name right now. Don Clendenin would hang over the plate, and so would Rico Carty. But Rico Carty's an ex-boxer. I didn't want to hit him. But Don Clendenin, I spun
ends,
a few times.
Way, yeah. He was a large mammal.
Oh, yes.
But you could hold your own out there. You weren't afraid if someone came out after you.
I never got charged, minor league or big leagues. But the biggest thing is
you never got charged?
You keep throwing in there. Don Baylor might come out there and tap you on your head. You know, who knows? There were a lot of Frank Robinson hung over the plate, too. So, well, I mean, there was just certain hitters you gave a little more respect to because they might want to walk out there and, hey, challenge you. That was part of the game when I played.
The brawl I remember the most in my life is, I think it was 70, maybe it was 69. You guys in the Pirates, Doc Ellis at
right.
Wrigley Field, 4th of July game.
Yeah, he threw at Ron Santo and Leo did something, said something, and he came out there. And they had Clendenin on the team and, Cepeda. No, excuse me, not Cepeda. They had Stargell. and the left-handed pitcher, Bob Veal. Holy smoke. He was a large mammal. Holy smoke. 6'8", 270. I mean, he could pick up two people at one time.
Doc contended he pitched a no-hitter on acid. You ever talked to him about that? You believe that?
No, we were teammates in Texas for two seasons. No, I don't believe it, no. But, hey, people believe it. Hey, they documented it. It's in the paper.
I read a story about it. They refreshed it, I think, last year. Maybe it was the 49th. I don't remember what anniversary it was. But I guess the plan wasn't – he wasn't supposed to pitch that day. But he and his girlfriend decided the night before they were going to do acid. So he finds out in the morning he's got a pitch. So according to this article, Fergie, his response was, well, I guess I better get more acid. So he doubled down. Can you imagine that catcher's mitt just talking to you all day?
Oh, no, not really.
Slider.
Yeah.
Slider.
The biggest thing is I've never did any kind of drug like that. I imagine. I mean, you got to be on your tiptoes all the time. So I don't know how you're going to pitch.
Yeah, on a hallucinogen.
Yeah, really.
That'd
come
be
on.
Insane.
Yeah.
But we were talking about steroids for that era. I mean, greenies were a thing.
They took dexedrine and benzedrine. It's like a woman's diet pill, and a lot of guys would take them for a double hitter if you played a second game. And you know, I'm not sure what even that it does for you. I got no idea.
Yeah. Because I mean, there was, and then you know, obviously, cocaine in that era, right? Yeah. I would think that would help get you through some doubleheaders.
If you're on the bench, sitting on the bench.
I talked to Willie Wilson about it. He said it made him play better.
Whoa, okay.
He said it.
One
made
individual,
him,
okay.
I'm just saying. He's like, I'm not proud of it, but it was a thing that I was great without it, and I was great with it.
Mm. Well, hey, that's Willie Wilson.
I find that tough to believe. I really do.
Yeah, he's like, I'm not proud of it, but it was just the thing that he was able to thrive on.
Yeah. Well, Bill Lee said once he put marijuana on his Wheaties so he wanted to be up for the game. I don't understand that either.
Yeah, no, it'd have the opposite effect.
Yeah, right.
Fergie, great to visit with you. Thank you so much for coming down here today. Always good to see you. What is most critical for the short term with these Chicago Cubs for them to turn this thing in the right direction, your opinion?
I think it's all about the pitching. They've got great hitting. I just think that they have to go out there and shut the other team down for at least six or seven innings and score some runs. And then their bullpen threw pretty good yesterday. They used four guys out of the bullpen. So I just think that give those guys some credit. They know what they're supposed to do. And then they know the job. Let's see what happens. Let's give them an opportunity to go out there and do it.
The book is the 1969 Cubs, Long Remembered, Never Forgotten. And you can send an email to autograph1@gmail.com for an exclusive Fergie Jenkins T-shirt. Good luck with the book and the T-shirt. And we always love when you come in studio.
I appreciate it. Looking forward to it. Thank you.
Thank you, Fergie.
That's the Hall of Famer, Fergie Jenkins.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.